Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
You are now listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Episode 202 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this week, for this episode, we are joined by the fabulous Extended Editions, Martin Lejeune.
Hello!
This might be because this is a very special episode talking mostly about Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Huzzah!
Which was one of our most talked about sort of influential things that people on the podcast have kind of like, it's played a big part in their lives, except mine. This is something I'm a very casual fan of. Whereas we've just before we started recording, like Cookie described what happened in one particular episode, and Martin was like, it was this episode. That could happen again whilst you're listening to this episode. It's great. I haven't got prizes for people if they do guest descriptions and name episodes. No. I'm sorry.
You promised.
I know, I promised. So I'm gonna oversee things, but I'm hoping these guys will keep you pleasantly, in company whilst they talk about, a show that formed a major backbone of television between the 80s and sort of mid-90s, really, for a lot of people the world over.
Yes, it did.
So gentlemen, take it away.
Okay, so shall we start with a couple of favourite episodes?
Yeah.
So kind of looking through the episode guides online, I really enjoyed Parallels. I believe that's the one in, I think it's season 7, where Worf kind of gets kind of dragged into like different parallel universes.
Yes, that one.
That one was good.
Well done. You found a season 7 episode. That was good.
I actually quite enjoyed season 7.
And it was followed up the week after by The Pegasus.
Which was
a very good episode.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the one where that wheelchair bloke from Lost turns up and shouts at Riker, but yeah. Has to keep secrets and they fly through an asteroid.
Hang on, wrong actor.
No.
It was the bloke who... the bloke from Robocop.
No, that's Ronnie Cox, and that was in Chain of Command, I believe.
Oh my God.
He played Pike, didn't he, in the wheelchair?
No.
What?
Now, while we're on this theme, I just thought I'd throw my stuff in swerve. I'm going now. Bye!
Ronnie Cox played Captain Jellicoe in Chain of Command, who was the only guest actor to record a captain's log.
Oh! Yes, you are. You're right.
I'm glad we've got that sorted out. There's the episode.
There's two episodes kind of crossed over because... They're both, actors I've liked from, other series and films.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, season 7, by that point, it was getting a little bit of a, just let it rest. It's tired.
You know what? I've been rewatching the Blu-rays and I've not seen the last couple of seasons probably since they were on the BBC.
Yeah.
And I'm just getting up to season 5 of my rewatch and it is like, really, season 3 it sort of finds its feet, season 4 it hits its stride, and season 5 it's just doing it with panache.
Yes, I have to agree. My ranking for the series, and to give you an idea of the the time it was on for me, obviously, as soon as there was a new sci-fi series on TV, I thought I'd watch it and say Star Trek The Next Generation. Well, that's a bit of a shit name, isn't it? I'm not sure if this is going to be any good. But started watching it, and the bee being the bee, they waited until later on. It was at least into the second season by the time they, you know, picked it up, didn't they? They only bought the mono copies to save a bit of money.
Yeah.
Thumbs up, Beeb. But that meant that they pretty much just had it on weekly, unless there was a sporting for them to knock off. Which there often was. It's like, oh, there's balls, so we can't watch, you know, we can't show Star Trek because we've got to televise old people rolling balls on fake turf. Well, thanks, BBC.
No, you can't watch what you want to watch because more people want to see something dull.
Yeah.
But can't we just put it in some sort of repository that can be accessed remotely at will? No, that's a nonsense concept.
Oh, that will never catch on, surely. I mean, that's a Star Trek concept, isn't it? But let's see. I vividly remember I was starting out college in 91, and I had to set the timer on my VCR, again, showing my age, shut up everyone, for season 3, which was just starting. And the episode I remember, for full nerd credentials, I was playing a role-playing game with some of my IT college, mates in their library, and we were watching the episode that was on last that particular night was The Enemy, which was the early season 3 episode where Glondon Core makes its first appearance as a, you know, as a world. It's a border world on the Romulan border. It's one of those disputed worlds. And it basically the episode is there's a disturbance there, so the Enterprise goes and checks it out. The away team goes down.
Is that the one where they beam down and Riker's like, okay, no one fall down any holes? And Geordi's like, you what? Ah!
Yeah. It's basically, oh, hang on, you could have told me before I fell down a hole. And they go, oh, well, we can't, you know, there's a storm coming in, we have to leave. And Geordi is stranded on this planet, and the Romulans turn up. And the Romulans, oh yeah, we're just conducting tests, and there's definitely not any Romulans down on the surface.
That's the one where Geordi has to team up with the Romulan to survive, doesn't he?
Yes.
Bakra, was it?
It's something like that, yeah. But I remember that being on, you know, on TV, and to me, I mean, there are a few season 2 episodes which were absolutely, you know, really good episodes, really good sci-fi. But by the time, as Martin says, by the time it got to, you know, season 3, it was like, oh yeah, they have, you know, they've discovered the formula.
Yes.
And they're doing good sci-fi.
That was the first season as well to finish on a cliffhanger, wasn't it?
Yes, that's when they started the cliffhanger. The cliffhanger, yes. Being best of both worlds.
Yes.
With the return of the Borg and the abduction of Picard. Sorry, spoilers there.
Can it really be spoilers now?
Surely it's outside of the polite spoilers.
Because I haven't been able to corrupt Manish yet on it yet, so she hasn't had to watch all 7 seasons of me, bless her.
Does she listen to this podcast?
She won't be listening to this one.
But let's see. I was looking through some of my collection a little bit before we came on air, and definitely one of the season 2 episodes, because I regard, you know, season 1, it's like my mother's recently decided to, you know, start looking through them because they're on Netflix, and of course it's just more convenient for her.
Yeah, definitely.
So she was watching that episode from the first season with the, oh, is this slightly racist? With the, this is definitely not a kind of a Middle Eastern Sultan episode where Tasha Yar, the security officer before Worf,
You know, has to have a has to have a fight with
Code of Honor.
Yeah, that's it. With it's just, you know, watching that in the late '80s, you know, mid-teenage me was thinking, I'm pretty sure this is a bit racist.
Apparently, there was nothing in the script about the race of the characters, and they just brought this director on who was like, right, I know which way you can go with this.
And everyone goes, oh, good, you've made this.
Well done, mate, you've got it. Yes, yeah, this sound.
Feudal, fighty planet. You made them all black and, you know, dressing sort of, you know, Middle Eastern, you know, stereotypical sort of, you know, early 20th century type of, you know, walk like an Egyptian type thing and go, and, you know, like silvery, sparkly fabrics and turbans and stuff. And it's just, oh no.
And there'll be no treaty, no vaccine, and no Lieutenant Yar.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, that wasn't a great episode, was it? But, you know, there are several episodes in the first season that if anyone was, shall I start watching this? So, yes, you can watch the first season if you want, but skip these.
I mean, they basically started it after the pilot with The Naked Now, that was a remake of an original series episode. And I think
everyone get space drunk and we can have space sex because we're space edgy.
The idea was that it introduced everyone to the characters by making them all act out of character.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, that's far from the worst episode. From in the first season. I mean, I saw enough promise with it to stick with it. And of course, at the time, there was bugger all sci-fi on TV, was there? I mean, you know, it started in 1987 in the US. I'm pretty sure it must have been 88 or 89 by the time it started broadcasting in the UK.
Hmm.
So, yeah, there was naff all sci-fi. So, you know, this was, and of course, this was the first sci-fi to come along, which was, we're doing it on a TV budget, but we're going to try and match up to, you know, motion picture special effects. Because that was one of the things that they set out to do with Star Trek Next Generation, wasn't it?
The pilot was done by ILM.
Yeah.
And the idea was, like the original series, you should shoot 5 or 10 shots and use them over and over. And ILM were rather clever and managed to get credited on every episode. According to Memory Alpha, the UK premiere was the 26th of September 1990.
Back in hell.
I can't imagine waiting 3 years for the premiere of like a US show these days over here on a legitimate means.
You wouldn't be able to do that. Not now, because people would just be like, well, no UK TV channel is showing it quickly to the internet.
Well, I mean, at this particular point, the best you could do when it comes to international communication was if you had a pen pal or if you had Usenet access or something like CompuServe. You could do stuff like that, but you would not be able to actually download the episode. We're talking, less than 56K. Yeah.
Translation for our listeners at home, he means Facebook for granddads.
Yeah, pretty much. Or,
who are you calling granddad, you bugger?
Yeah, this was before the internet was by any means widely. Actually, this was before the internet.
This is back when you paid for your ISP with stamps.
Yeah.
I mean, no comment.
There were bulletin board services, which were, you know, kind of like, you know, portal websites, but you couldn't get much on them. I remember around this time I was trying to import video cassettes from, you know, the US. The postage was about the same as, so if I bought a film or something like that for $30 or $40,
yeah,
on VHS, I would have to pay about $30 or $40 for the postage
to get it. That's if customs didn't decide that, you know, because it wasn't certified, you know, that, you know, they weren't just going to, you know, keep it themselves. And then, of course, you didn't have the multi-standard playback, you know, VCRs as standard. So you'd probably have to pay 20 or 30 quid to get your tape stands converted by someone. So just the entire idea of swapping things around, you know, because you hear about that, you know, with, you know, the fan subs and fan dubs and, you know, stuff like that for, you know, the anime at the time, where they said, oh, or just, you know, swap around tapes. If you're in the UK, you're a bit shafted when it came to that.
So you're saying you paid all that money, waited all that time, went to all that effort, and you ended up with Skin of Evil.
Yeah. Which I've just decided, you know, I decided to, you know, best Star Trek Next Generation episodes. One of them is listed Skin of Evil.
Eh?
Let's see. Den of Geek. Star Trek Next Generation season, you know, 25 must-watch episodes. Skin of Evil.
It's not that good.
It's a bit shit. It's a bit shit. I mean, the only reason behind it was that, hey, we can, you know, we can kill off a, you know, a character because the actress wants to leave.
I mean, to be fair, sort of just having her get shot randomly was a ballsy move at the time.
Definitely, because it was one of the first TV shows to actually kill off one of the main characters, wasn't it?
And to just say, we're not going to do a heroic moment, we're just going to do it out of the blue.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a bit mold-breaking at that point. I will give them that. Because I remember watching it, and it was like, hang on, what?
Oh, yeah.
She'll be brought back. Oh, she's not being brought back. Oh, the character's actually dead, and it, you know, that character, that episode ends with sort of a memorial hologram that, you know, she's recorded.
Bless.
Is that, oh, teenage me was quite upset by Denise Crosby leaving.
Yes, I was actually quite upset because her and Data's relationship was getting quite...
Teenage me didn't really care about her and Data's relationship.
I thought you might say that, yeah. Well, yeah. But no, I was quite liking the whole Data and Tasha relationship.
I quite liked it, and I think they kind of lost that later on because there was this whole thing of, you know, Data and Geordi being friends.
Yeah, they did tend to...
That was a different kind of friendship.
That was a very different kind of friendship. It was still the 80s, after all.
There was actually a script in the first season which would have shown a gay relationship, which was written by David Gerrold, who basically DC Fontana and David Gerrold were brought on initially to run The Next Generation, and then Rick Berman was brought on by the studio to run The Next Generation. And that's rather how things played out. And there's different accounts of exactly what happened. But basically, this script called Blood and Fire was commissioned, and it didn't end up being made, supposedly because the... either because the relationship was too much for 80s TV or the script wasn't very good. It was later written as a novel as part of Gerald's Star Wolf series.
Right. Which, I remember hearing about that.
Which are well worth a read, by the way. It was also later adapted into an episode of Star Trek New Voyages, the fan film series. And that had Nick Cook from Star Trek Intrepid in.
It's a shame that didn't make it into the original series. If you consider the context in which The Next Generation was coming out at the time, this is at the height of the AIDS pandemic kind of coming to public awareness and stuff. And there was a lot of negativity around homosexual relations at the time. And to see a positive relationship on a show like that, that would have been quite nice, at least for back then.
It would have been.
People love to celebrate, you know, how much the original show did in commenting on things like race relations or Vietnam. But it seemed later on with the sequel series, they were a lot less keen to actually do it.
From what I've read, I think Gene Roddenberry wanted it to be, you know, a little bit more, you know, adult in content, not adult as in squishy. But because they were selling it straight into syndication, which meant that each episode had to be sold. Was it in pretty much separately, and it was up to whichever, you know, local station was the Paramount affiliate, you know, decided when to show it or if they were going to show it at all?
Yeah. I'm not sure if it even needed to be the Paramount affiliate.
It was mostly Paramount affiliate, but the American TV market is very strange in, you know, when you're used to the UK, isn't it?
As I understand it from going there and trying to watch things on TV, it's basically like instead of having... you know, BBC on channel 1 and ITV on channel 3, then you might get, you know, the Fox network on channel 1 in one city or on channel 12 in another city, and it'll be all localized programming. But if, you know, one network's carrying a show, then that'll be where it is. Whereas with Next Generation, it was... and I forget the terminology, but basically anyone could just buy it directly, any network, any broadcaster.
Yeah.
Syndicated, that's it.
Yeah.
And generally syndicated didn't do that well, and Next Generation did, you know, like, it basically changed the model when it started broadcasting like that.
Yeah. I mean, from what I can tell, the closest I can describe the, you know, the US TV market is if we all remember what, you know, before ITV kind of reined them in, we'd all have, you know, the local ITV stations, and you'd have generally the same things on, usually at the same time, maybe some, you know,
unless
variations.
You're in Scotland.
Unless you're in Scotland, fuck you. Oh, you're in Wales. Tough shit. Here's something Welsh instead, and you know, the thing you've tuned in to watch. So, oh, thanks.
Here's something local your gran will enjoy.
Yeah. That reminds me. You up here, on, you know, Border TV, we used to get Tick the High Road. as if you can imagine, a made for specifically for Scottish TV soap. On a budget that's like Crossroads, that's around about it.
I'd quite happily forgotten about that, you bugger. Thanks for that.
There you go, nightmares. But yeah, when it got to, you know, later on in, you know, in the evenings, all your regional ITV channels would just fracture. You know, pretty much. After the news, you know, if I knew someone living in the Granada region, they could be watching, let's say, like Highlander, you know, the TV series. Yep. Whereas here, it could be Hitman and Her, or it could be Married with Children. You know, whatever they had picked up as a large bundle of cheap stuff, and they just threw it on.
One of my favourite episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation is The Wounded.
Is that the... Definitely not terrorists.
It's the season 4 episode that introduces the Cardassians and O'Brien's old captain.
Yes. That is a very good one. That was the introduction of the Cardassians, wasn't it?
What's great is they did an auction where they sold off videos with early work cuts of some of the episodes.
Right.
And The Wounded is one that popped up on YouTube. And it's got the production audio. So when the Cardassians are walking around in those big rubber suits, you can just hear squeaking.
Yeah.
And it ended in a song, which not enough Star Trek episodes do. Well, you got to be careful saying that, because otherwise you get row, 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 row your boat again, but, you know.
Yeah. Or you someone just dubs over the Enterprise theme song and no one wants that.
No.
But I thought that was clever how they developed O'Brien as like a secondary character sort of before they were even starting to think of having a spin-off.
Yes. Yep. I really liked O'Brien.
Yeah, I did actually. But that was the nice thing about Next Generation compared to the original series, because so many episodes during the seasons concentrated on lessening crew members. So one of my favourite crew members that appeared seemingly from nowhere and came into quite a few was Mr. Barclay. Tim Barclay.
Yay.
According to
your inhibitions.
According to the
goddess of empathy.
According to the trivia section of IMDb, the guy who played Barclay basically managed to get on through asking Whoopi Goldberg to kind of put in a good word for him.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean, and if you're going to get anyone to put in a good word for you, it's probably the, you know, relatively big name, you know, Hollywood
Whoopi
actress.
Yeah.
Who'd pretty much just said, hey, I like Star Trek. If you've got a character, I'll guest star.
Yes.
Well, shall we talk about Guinan?
Yes.
Guinan?
Yes.
And her, she was so host cool. of Excellent Hats.
Yes.
Amazing hats. It's like, okay, we've done a season. It's been quite successful. But what our sci-fi show is missing is a pub run by a mystic.
I feel like this is it. What every sci-fi show needs is a pub run by a mystic.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think Voyager is actually one of the few series that didn't have anyone like that, because it obviously had like Quark in DS9.
Don't swear.
That's because Voyager didn't have any characters apart from.
hang on.
Apart from who? Sorry.
Voyager and Quark.
What?
You don't. You see.
DS9 had Quark.
Yeah, DS9 is Quark. Where's Quark? Yeah.
Unless there was a comma there. There was a silent comma.
There was a silent comma. Yeah.
And in fact, I do believe that Quark did actually cameo in an episode of Next Generation. I can't remember what the context was.
It's in Season 7, and they're after the Duras sisters. And they're like, hey, they last appeared on an episode of Deep Space Nine. Let's phone up Deep Space Nine. Oh, hello, Quark.
Let's phone up Deep Space Nine.
Would you betray them for some gold?
Gold pressed platinum.
Gold pressed platinum.
That's the one, gold pressed platinum. Yes.
That was a weird concept. The fact that you've basically got the Federation, which, you know, is kind of moneyless to a, you know, great extent.
Yes.
But and you've still got gold pressed platinum in, you know.
Well, the concept was that, of course, as soon as anything could be replicated, then it became essentially worthless.
Yeah, and then they stuck in like MacGuffins, like, oh, you can't actually, you know, replicate certain. You know,
can I bring in some science a minute? Please let me bring in some science. So you're talking about replicators. You're talking about replicators. Guess what I read today? I read about scientists have apparently been able, not on a huge scale, but been able to manufacture protein from carbon in the air.
I vaguely remember an article with a headline.
I think I only skimmed it, but it looked really interesting, and my first thought was replicators. It's like
awesome.
So, that's another country. I'm stepping away now.
I mean, if you had a machine that could literally make food out of air, then, well, yeah.
Well, that was in the lore of the universe.
that's pretty much how, you know, the Federation came to be, as a, you know, a kind of a sort of a socialist organization. Because once you've got the technology to replicate, you know, as you say, you know, to take anything whatsoever and convert it into either energy or a different form of matter, which can, you know, take the form of, you know, food or machinery or, you know, anything like that, you know, a very high-tech 3D printer.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll, you know, filter. And you, once you've got the basic needs and you've got a lot of your wants sorted, then what's left is betterment. And let's see, you've got in Next Generation, you've got Synthahol, where the idea was it's synthetic alcohol which can be dismissed, be consciously, you know, dismissed. And the law behind that was that the Ferengi would use it, because then, you know, they would get drunk with a client, know that they could dismiss, you know, the drunkenness. And, you know, if the client thought it was just, you know, a standard alcohol, then they could get them to sign whatever the contract, you know, hell contract they wanted. And the whole thing about gold pressed latinum was that it was too complicated for replicators. So it's, you know, the ultimate...
Which kind of doesn't make sense if you think about it, because, you know, the body is kind of really fucking complicated as well, but it still manages to, you know, disassemble and reassemble that.
Yeah, and let's not get into the you know, whether transporters kill you every time you use it. I think the idea was that no, they don't in the Star Trek universe. They convert you into energy and then back into matter.
Enterprise does specifically say they don't.
Yeah.
But so if you've been through it, how would you know?
Ooh.
Well, it depends what you mean by you, really. Because, I mean, the human body kind of, you know, replenish itself every, you know, obviously at different rates, but, you know, what, seven years? Every 7 years? Every cell in your body, you know. So.
Yes, but there's continuity.
Exactly.
You're not just that version of Riker that was trapped on a planet for 10 years.
What was that about MacGuffins? I mean, it makes sense in the context, but it's still a bit science bollocks.
So, I mean, you'd imagine that between the transporters and the hollow...
There's an engineer who was on the Enterprise in that episode during the Dominion War... continuously sending memos to people going, we have a machine that can make people.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then that would be an episode where it would be the, you know, the ethical problems with that, because, and that brings me to one of my favorite episodes, which gets a callback in Star Trek Next Generation. The second episode, second season episode rather, Measure of a Man.
Oh yeah.
Where the concept is, because Dr. Noonien Sung invented Lieutenant Commander Data, the debate is, does he have human rights? Because he is by nature not of nature. He is not, you know, is he alive? Is he sentient? He certainly gives the, you know, the appearance of being, but would it be ethical to, you know, dismantle him, find out how he works, and then just make endless copies so you've got, you know, like thousands, tens of thousands, possibly millions of datas being sent out and doing the, you know, the dangerous work because they don't have human rights.
This bloke just rocks up and is just like, here's your new orders, decapitation.
Yeah, it's like, you look a bit different, I'd like to take you apart. And you go, oh, in a sexy way. And you go, no, not in a sexy way, with spanners. And you go, oh, that's not sexy.
Sexy spanners?
No, not even sexy spanners. Just plain cranking it.
Just plain cranking it.
Oh yeah, it just turns up and starts cranking it. And you go, I'd like to crank you, Data. And you go, no, thank you.
See, maybe that should have been a reality in Parallels. You know, that they showed where basically, you know, every single, you know, starship had basically a crew of Datas.
Yeah, because, well, The episode takes the form of a court case where Riker, presumably because they didn't want to hire another actor, because they, you know, they'd already hired one for the judge, who was. I can't remember.
I just want to point out the trope of having an existing character member be some form of legal representation. That is a trope. That has happened in many series.
Yes, I remember it happening in.
Oh, yeah.
It even happens in Supernatural. Away I go.
Wait, what?
Yes.
When? What?
In season 7, 8, or 9. It's one of those. Sam has to represent Dean before Osiris. This is legal representative.
I remember that one.
Yeah. Okay, that's my reference for the night.
Okay. I remember it happening in New Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Yes.
But, of course, so Star Trek does that with Data.
And you'll note that this was before those other things.
Because it was in about 1988, this particular episode of, you know, is this AI character basically alive and, you know, do these rights apply to him? As well as organic life. And that is, of course, first of all, that episode gets referred back to in, I think, was it season 4, Data's Day?
Yes.
Yes.
Where it takes the narrative form of Data is just sending a report back to the scientist who wanted to dismantle him. Because they've, you know, since he, you know, the court case and he's sort of, realized the error of his ways, he corresponds with Data to try and get insight to continue his own work without taking him apart. And
you've got to love Data, who, since he has no emotions, this guy's like, yeah, so I'm going to experiment on you. You might die. I have no regard for you as a person because you're not one. And Data's just like, we'll keep chatting about it.
Yeah. It's just, whatever. So that's fine. I'm okay doing that.
Yeah.
But, the episode, you know, Data's Day is, he's, you know, saying, hello, Doctor, that's it, Commander Maddox of the Daystrom Institute, which is a reference to the original series of Star Trek. Was it Professor Daystrom?
Dr. Daystrom, I think.
Dr. Daystrom. And he's saying, this is happening, and we've got a Vulcan diplomat, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's just Data's observations of things that are going on, and Brian is marrying Keiko. That's also happening on that particular day. So it's Data trying to understand the, you know, human dynamics as well as, you know, political dynamics. So, you know, that's...
cool.
That's a favourite. And
I really liked was The Offspring. In season 3, where Data creates a daughter, as it were.
Yes.
And the Admiralty make the argument of, if we're going to have these androids, we probably shouldn't put them both in the same place on the frontier. And orders Data to send her away. And there's this brilliant moment when that happens where Picard takes a moment and you can see his mind working, and he tells Data not to do it, and you can see the moment where he, it's like, probably chucking the whole career away here, but...
This is just wrong. Yeah, it's not something that we should do. Picard has a conversation with Data about, you know, the responsibility of bringing a new life, you know, of making a new android, you know, positronic android like him, and, you know, Data just, you know, shoots back, well, do you have this conversation with organic crew members who are starting a family? Is it, well, of course you don't. And yeah. It's like, oh.
I think
one of the reasons why I like Star Trek Next Generation is because it kind of creates this set of principles and whatnot, and it actually tries to stick by them. Whereas the original series, it seems like they've got, you know, whatever, you know, the Prime Directive, presumably, or their version of it. But, the you know, Kirk pretty much like roughshod over, you know, the rules.
Well, that's because of the whole chaos behind the scenes where it wasn't getting great ratings because the network didn't get it.
Mm.
And of course,
more action, didn't they?
Yeah, the studio desperately wanted to fuck about with it, more or less. I mean, that's as good a summary as any. It's just, no, you're making stuff which is too complicated. We want Kirk to go to a planet, falls in love with a green girl, and punches someone. You know, punches a space barbarian.
who may or may not represent the Russians in some capacity.
Yes. Or, you know, something that America is involved in. Or, of course, you can have some chest-thumping patriotism that we can call back on, then that would be great. Thanks very much. And, of course, they do that later on in the original Star Trek. And it's just... Yeah, it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Unfortunately so. Generation.
Yeah, and the cast as well. You know, the main cast, they actually seem like they get on with each other, you know, really well, unlike the original series.
Oh, yes. There are stories behind that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, there's... yes, I was saying about the ethics. That was one of my favourite things about the series. There was later on in Voyager. Yeah, I'm going to give Voyager a positive nod here.
Oh,
bloody hell!
And that's where they have the storyline where they've got back in intermittent long range contact with the Federation.
Mm. Mm.
And it turns out that the EMH has been a bust, you know, back home in the Federation.
Yeah.
And they're kind of, you know, just being retired and used as menial workers because they're just, you know, computer-generated holograms with a personality matrix. So there's, you know, the whole thing of what is the Doctor and is he worth... Because he's entirely virtual.
Yeah,
he is just, you know, a projection and a simulation. What right does that have? So that's called back again. And
you know how, you know, writers always ask where you get their ideas, where they get their ideas, and they normally, you know, just shrug or make a joke. The writers on Voyager never had that problem because they just pulled out the Next Generation videos and were like, here,
You know, feet up on a chair, eating popcorn. Hey, here's a Star Trek Next Generation episode we can rip off. But do it worse.
Hey, what if we do an episode where the captain becomes a Borg?
No, how about we do an episode where they break the warp barrier and then the captain and the helmsman become space newts and have space new babies?
To be fair, Next Generation never did that one.
Yeah, there's a reason for that. So let's see. When it comes to, you know, I've already said on the, you know, past Nerds Assembles that one of my favorite genres of sci-fi is when they're talking about AI.
Mm-hmm.
And what is AI? And is it aware? You know, all that kind of thing.
Did you read this week that Facebook had to shut down its bots because they developed their own language?
Yeah. Just like Google have as well.
Because my father-in-law mentioned that, but he's very much of the Daily Mail, Daily Express, Brexit voting demographic.
Mm-hmm.
And I pretty much pointed out that they shut it down because they stopped speaking English. They invented their own way of communicating.
Yes.
And that's from what I can tell, you know, the whole thing was, you know, they said, hey, AI routines, why don't you go off and find a more efficient way of talking? while using English. And the AI routines took one look at English and thought, yeah, fuck it. That's not very efficient. Let's just invent our own way, which is far more efficient to exchange information and communicate with each other. And that's what they did. And, that's basically the whole story, isn't it?
Mm.
Yes.
It's just AI routines decide that English, a clunky bastard language, which has been nicked, warped, bastardized over, thousands of years from Anglo-Saxon, French, all the various places that, the English, conquered. Mm. For some reason, they've looked at that and thought, that's a bit messy. We can do something better. Which, to be fair, pretty much anyone who doesn't already speak English has thought when they've looked at English.
And they named it Skynet.
Yeah. It's like, hey, why don't you speak English? We'll just give you guns. Your task is to sort email, but we'll give you control of intercontinental ballistic missiles.
It's the point you guys are trying to erase with this very long tangent that a lot of the ethical issues that were raised in Star Trek The Next Generation are in fact ones that we are actually having to contemplate today. For instance, the fact that obviously Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg over the past few weeks have been engaged in an argument over how much we can trust AI and how safe it is, and the fact that protocols need to be put in place now for the safety of organic life, essentially.
But we were just saying we like the ones with data in.
Yeah.
Yeah, data's good.
Yeah.
We're like data's ace.
On the EMH.
Yeah.
EMH are the only good thing about Voyager.
Yeah. Did you like his brother then?
What, Law?
Yeah.
He's in one of my other favourite episodes, which was Brothers.
Yes.
Which was the episode that starts off with, it starts off well. It's the whole security aspect, because it starts off with the second officer of the flagship of the Federation, a.k.a. One of Ten Commander Data, being hijacked and stealing the Enterprise. And what I found out years later was when Data mimics the voice of Picard...
Mm-hmm.
That's Brent Spiner's voice. That's his impression of Patrick Stewart.
Cool.
And it's thanks to the internet, of course, because when he's done panels at conventions, they've said we've heard you do an impression of Patrick Stewart, and he's sat there and done it on stage.
Oh, cool.
Including saying that when they were filming Star Trek The Next Generation, once or twice he phoned up Patrick Stewart's other half and said, oh, sorry, I can't make it home.
Awesome.
Speaking of the AIs not wanting to talk English and languages, there was an episode about languages called Darmok, which was very good.
Yes.
Yes.
Segued.
Yes, that was very nicely segued. Thank you very much. You could say Darmok and Jalada Tanagra.
Shaka, when the walls fell. No, we're going to run with this.
Temba, the River Temba.
I remember the episode. I don't remember the details of what they speak.
So Temba, the River Temba, is a reference when the aliens are having a conversation on the bridge. When they... an alien species who's repeatedly tried to get in touch with the Federation, but every
Shaka,
time...
Shaka, his arms wide.
Yes.
When you see
those... Damok and Jalad on the ocean.
You know when you see those animated memes and, it's like if someone posts one as a comment, they're not literally saying the words in the meme, they're using the meme to comment on the post.
Yeah, oh yeah, I recognize
that's how the aliens' language works, except we don't know what any of the memes are.
It's all reference. Yeah, it's all, yeah.
I got that.
It's a very good way.
I got that, I just couldn't remember the actual,
I was saying what they were saying.
I don't actually remember the episode, if I'm honest.
It would kind of be like, you know, if there's someone who's young and annoying and you just want them to stop, but you've never seen Star Trek The Next Generation and, you know, suddenly someone just says, shut up, Wesley.
I'm going to try that tomorrow.
But it, you know, if you knew it was inert to shut up someone who was being a smart ass.
Yes.
Then that's you know, that's the kind of thing. So it's their role, you know, the you know, the aliens speak in references to their history and their mythology.
Mm, yeah,
and of course, well, as Troy says in the episode, if you said Juliet on her balcony, it would be like a, you know, a scene of romance. It would be a scene of, you know, of wanting.
Yeah.
Because you know that Juliet is on the balcony waiting to hear from Romeo. But if you don't know the story, if you've never encountered the story, then you wouldn't know it. It would just be, who's Juliet? Why is she on the balcony?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a great example where you can, you know, you can have the words literally translated, and, you know, all the names literally translated, but unless you have the context, then you do not understand.
Hmm. So basically, these aliens who they've met a couple of times before but never really got anywhere with, rock up and are just like, sup, yo? And they beam their captain and Picard down onto a planet and then put a thingy up so they can't just beam him away. And yeah, he's got knives, and Picard's like, well, bugger that.
Well, shit.
And he's like, no, no, you take one, we fight a monster. But he can't say that because he speaks in metaphor.
And because the metaphor being Darmok on the ocean, Darmok at Tanagra, Gillard on the ocean, Gillard at Tanagra, Darmok and Gillard at Tanagra.
And it's like, it's this really clever episode that sort of plays with preconceptions, and it's very different to anything else Star Trek has done. It's generally now regarded as one of the best episodes done. But at the time, the viewer's response was to write 500 letters of complaint that a phaser was fired from a torpedo tube.
To be fair, I noticed that because I am a massive fucking nerd. That made me sick, because it was, hang on, why are they firing from the torpedo tube? I didn't notice that.
If it makes you feel any better, if you look at the Blu-ray or Netflix, they've actually...
Yes, I was going to say that. I recently rewatched it, thanks to it being on Sci-Fi when I was cat sitting. I'm supposed to be house sitting, you know, for in-laws, but basically I go around and mug the cat for 2 hours a day.
It sounds like there's a cat that just loves Star Trek, and you're, hey, you're watching this, are you, Tiddles? Excellent.
Yeah. feed me, pet my belly, and then we can watch Star Trek, which is, it's kind of like a sext, but weird. Anyway, that's kind of a perfect relationship, isn't it? Except not a cat. But anyway, so, you know, I rewatched it, and I will admit, I was sitting there waiting.
Is this where we find out that Retroid's favorite? Is this where we find out that Retroid's favorite character in all of Star Trek is Emrez, the cat lady from the animated series?
Gorgeous Spot.
But yeah, my favourite character is Spot, definitely.
Apparently,
even though Spot.
Another bit from the trivia section was that Brent Spiner actually dislikes cats.
Yeah.
And usually the feeling is mutual, but the one that played Spot was okay-ish with him.
He particularly disliked the end of Generations when he finds Spot and cries. And it's like, why does he have to find Spot? Can't he find Geordi or someone?
And yeah, they, just like, there was, what was it? The more of a fuss he raised about, you know, Spot, the more scenes with Spot that they wrote in.
Yes.
And there's a, you know, a scene which, you know, kind of stuck out at the time, but there's a scene in was it the third season, fourth season, something like that, but where Beverly and Deanna are doing sort of calisthenics, you know, with each other. And that was pretty much written in because the actors were having a bit of a, you know, a spat, and they'd fallen out at the time.
Oh.
So the crew thought it would be a good idea to make them do a scene together because they're bastards.
You would have thought that had been more structured than that, wouldn't you?
Well, it all depended on who was, you know, who was doing what, because they'd crank the episodes out quite quickly.
Hmm. True.
And they decided, we've got a few minutes.
I just love the thought of like two of the cast members being like that, and then, you know, people being like, no, you stand in the corner, we'll film it, we'll just stick it in an episode, it'll be fine.
Yeah. Now let's see. Said about Darmok, where, you know, the whole thing was a common enemy and, you know, adverse conditions can form an alliance when, you know, two people can't communicate. So that's basically the plot of Darmok, and that's why the aliens, you know, transport, you know, their captain and Picard down onto the planet.
Hmm.
It's so they can do that. And, you know, when words fail, maybe they can just, you know, get a handle on each other's actions. Let's see. A few other, rather excellent episodes.
Could I bring something up from, like, behind the scenes?
Oh, please do.
Is they were one of the very few shows to have an open script submission.
Mm. Yes.
Anyone could send off for the writer's guide. And, they're very difficult to track down now. I did manage to find a copy online from the one of the later Voyager seasons.
Doesn't count because it's Voyager.
Exactly. But I remember, I think they actually printed them in Star Trek Monthly in the 90s. Not that I ever read that, because I played sports and talked to girls.
Awesome. I believe you're casting shade there. throwing shade. I'm so down with the kids. I don't know what it is.
Evidently,
it's only casting shade if you're a red mage.
It came about because Ron Moore managed to get a set tour because he was a friend of a friend, and he did a very professional thing. Aside, it wasn't professional at all. He wrote his own script and just sort of left it for someone, which isn't usually advised at all for wannabe writers. But lucky for him, his script was the season 3 episode The Bonding, which ended up being bought and made.
Sadly.
And from what I've read, very few scripts that were submitted were ever... got out of the slush pile. What happened more often is they'd take the idea and rework it. Or they might bring the writers in for a pitch session. But very few people actually got staffed through that. But the people who did were people like Rene, I can't say his name. Went on to produce Deep Space Nine, Ron Moore, the bloke who now is showrunner on The Expanse, Naren Shankar, and, you know, all these people who came in from it stayed for years and years and went on through DS9 and Voyager. But also a lot of people who, became writers, that was like their first submission. And to this day, you hear interviews with people who talk about, you know, their first, spec script being a Star Trek one, or that they got into pitch from that. I mean, American Gods, original Discovery runner, Pushing Daisies, Brian Fuller.
Yes.
He got his start. He came in and pitched on, wrote spec and came in and pitched on Deep Space Nine. And then a staff position opened on Voyager. If there's some really good podcasts with TV writers, and it's, the influence of the show has just been so far-reaching. You know, not even in genre telly, but just in TV itself.
There was a very good extra on the season 3 Blu-ray of Next Generation.
Yes.
Where it's... Oh, I've forgotten his name now. Family Guy.
Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah. Seth MacFarlane, who's doing that you know, sort of Star Trek parody.
Oh, my God. What is it with people on the internet who feel the need to declare how they're not interested in Discovery because now there's this comedy one where the funniest joke is about a toilet seat, which was old when the original series was on the air?
Yeah, that's because there are a lot of people who are just arses.
Yeah. Yeah.
There we go, that's that covered. But he sat down with a few writers, including Ronald Moore. Yeah, who did that little thing called Battlestar Galactica, was it?
Yes.
I mean, I don't think
I heard about one.
Yeah, I might have heard of it. And he was discussing, I think he discussed the bit where he got, you know, the tour and accidentally left his spec script there. And they were talking about, you know, how they did various things, and it was, you know, most of the time that, you know, by scripts in, and, you know, some of the, you know, the wider concepts. They liked a lot of concepts, and if they liked a concept, then they would, you know, buy that.
I listened to the commentary track he did for Redemption, the season 4-5 two-parter.
Yeah.
And it's like he's had one of the most successful TV careers, you know, going, and he's still happy to come back and talk about his break-in show. You know, that's insane. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, because most of the time it's like, yeah, I got, you know, the first... there are a few writers, and for a start there was the... let's see, was he a showrunner? Michael's... Straczynski.
Yes.
Who started off on stuff like Murder, She Wrote.
Hmm.
And well,
you don't get Joss Whedon doing commentary tracks for Roseanne.
No, because, yeah, he started off on that, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah, his dad got him in.
Huh.
Really? So that's a good example. When was the last time that you heard, Joss Whedon talk about Roseanne?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't help that, Roseanne Barr herself seems to have fallen down a rabbit hole of, yeah, let's not. But it's rather cool that, you have a successful writer who is more than happy to, you know, come back and talk about, you know, this experience and why you got into it in the first place. And I think that's part of Trek.
Definitely.
People like it. Some people like it because it's a sci-fi, and they like sci-fi. So other people like it because it's an optimistic sci-fi. I think...
Well, when Lost was airing and about halfway through its run, when they started time-traveling people, they were straight... out there happy to be like, oh yeah, we went back and watched All Good Things from Star Trek to, you know, see how it's done.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, the show is, you know, for everyone saying, oh, TV's changed and everything's serialized now, well, like, you still get shows where people are like, well yeah, we went back and checked out Star Trek.
Yeah, and at its best, Star Trek is bloody ace, and I've said before, some of the best episodes of, you know, Trek, not just Next Generation, but, you know, they can stand alone as, you know, excellent sci-fi in their own right.
Yeah.
Even things like, there's a relatively dull sounding episode in, I think it's the fourth season, called The Drumhead.
Yeah.
Which is another core-based one. Where the idea is there's, it looks like there's sabotage on the Enterprise. So you have someone who, you know, comes in and, you know, she's, was it, she, was, She's supposed to be semi-retired.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's, you know, got a reputation of being, you know, an excellent investigator and, you know, judge. And what happens is she basically starts a witch hunt. Where it's kind of, you know, the McCarthy hearings. Yeah. You know, who is pure enough to be, you know, a member of the Federation? Who, you know, oh, your grandfather, your great great paternal grandfather was Romulan. Does that mean you're a traitor? Oh, you're, you know, Captain Picard, you're sticking up for, you know, for this crewman. That, you know, why are you doing that? You know, all that kind of thing. And that's just an excellent episode in its own right. And then you've got things like, you know, Inner Light and The Defector, which is, another excellent season 3 one. Because season 3 really kicked ass.
Oh, the... What's the one where Picard is... They think Picard's a god.
Oh, God.
No, Picard.
Guys, I just want to point out that we are running short on time. I think now would be a good...
Who watches The Watchers?
That was that was an excellent one.
But that's really... When I watched that recently, I was really surprised because the girl in it is one of the cast of Californication.
Oh, bloody hell. That would be a bit weird.
I want to, guys. We need to look into wrapping this up. Do you have any final points, four of you want to make about?
Sum it up in 3 words.
Next Generation.
Q was great.
Did you say Q was great?
Q was great.
Yeah.
Sum it up in 3 words.
Yeah.
3 words. Make it so.
There are 4 lights.
Oh, I see what you did there. Because is that 3 words or is it 4?
Yeah.
Ah.
Warp 1 engage.
Yeah. Well, why bother with warp 1? It was just a little bit faster than impulse drive.
Because it was the safe option.
You didn't have time.
They didn't want to mow down grannies on their speeder bikes, did they?
Grannies in space.
Yeah.
The deflector dish would take care of them.
Now, you, points on the license? I don't fucking know. They just said it.
I'll just say I am nerdy enough to know to not only know the difference between impulse and warp, but also to know that even at impulse, they would sometimes at the faster impulse, they would generate a small warp field to get rid of the time dilation effect.
There was that episode where the Klingons forgot and. Popped up 80 years later, not realizing any time had shifted.
Okay, I think that was more than 3 words to sum it up.
Time travel fun.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, but how about disruption in the space-time continuum, which is still a term that sends chills of horror down my spine. It's like, oh god, not another one. Emily should watch.
Yeah.
Everybody should watch.
Excuse me, I've watched a great many episodes. I just don't... I'm...
You haven't watched all of them, have you?
She doesn't have encyclopedic knowledge.
I think I've probably watched all of them, bar like the ones that didn't get originally broadcast over here.
There was only one that didn't, and that was... That was, I think, because... something to do with terrorism.
Well, yeah, it was a bit too close to... current political climate at the time.
It's an episode called The High Ground, and it has a scene where Data says that Ireland was united as a result of terrorism, which wasn't really in keeping with government policy in the early 90s.
It's not really keeping with any policy today. But
it's like one of those episodes that if you just take it for a bit of sci-fi, it's a fun enough hour of TV, but it's trying to address the Irish situation from 6,000 miles away from people who haven't particularly done any research.
Yeah. But I'm going to say that that is seriously all we've got time for this week, because somebody's got to get up at crazy o'clock after we've...
Yeah.
Tune in next week when we talk about Deep Space Nine.
Yay!
Yay!
No. No, yeah. No, we're not.
Yeah.
although
we said Martin was welcome back at any time.
Yeah, he
Tune in for the macro episode where we talk about the good episode of Voyager.
Oh, do you know what? Maybe,
I like Timeless.
Maybe we should give people an idea of the order of things that we are actually going to discuss things, you know, because... We have a calendar now. I'm going to add, hopefully, a page to the website for this with some approximate dates. But apparently we're going to be talking about 8-bit games on the 14th of August.
Yes.
Yay.
Yes.
And then Doctor Who on the 28th of August.
Fucking banging.
Does Martin want to come back for Doctor Who?
No, thank you.
There we go.
Does any of our listeners?
Oh,
give us a bell if you want.
The best Colin Baker episodes.
Retro, go out and shoot yourself that bloody comment now.
that's just August.
To be fair, he has got a lot better on the Big Finish audio, so I'm actually beginning to like him a lot more.
The very highest budget Sylvester McCoy series.
In case anyone hasn't been able to see the pattern with those August dates, basically it's kind of like every other week, or depending on whether or not we manage to record every other episode, that we'll be discussing something. But I'm going to try and get the full list onto a page on the website. So that's it for this episode. So it is good night from...
Martin from the Extended Edition.
Me, Paul Wood, a.k.a. Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
Me, Paul, a.k.a. One-Armed _ Cookie, very hurt that you've dissed Sylvester McCoy, you twat.
It's good night for me, Paul Blurt, and on Twitter as @PaulBlurt.
And it's good night for me, Emily King, on Twitter at EK6891. You can find notes for this episode over at nerdassemble.co.uk. This episode's also probably at some point available on Stitcher and iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at nerdspodcast. We're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Like I said, I'm going to try to put a page, not like a regular post, but like a page with the vague kind of like when the specials for all of this is happening, so everyone can, because there's a few things on here where you kind of maybe want to start now, kind of like familiarizing yourself with it if you want to listen in,
especially if you want to get in on Supernatural.
Yeah, especially if you want to get in on Supernatural. Maybe I was a bit optimistic.
Like 11 seasons to get through on that one.
I wonder, is it set myself the challenge of like a guided episode? No, it's not possible. Like, there's episodes you could miss, but it's very few.
If I may recommend, how about a best episodes to watch for reference to /fic?
So that's like that's that's not as hard as it could be.
That's what they said.
But though, seriously, like after, we're looking like next year to look at things like Robin Hobb's sort of like main series set in the same universe, which starts with the Farseer trilogy, and those are some chunky. That's a lot of chunky fantasy to try and trawl through. In fact, she actually manages to write far more quickly than George R. R. Martin ever fucking does.
But George R. R. Martin has his typewriter set to quite slow.
Yeah, but he also can't write as well as Robin Hood does.
He is watching it on telly and he's just waiting to see how it finishes.
Also,
and I made a joke about a typewriter, but he actually writes on a DOS machine.
Also, if anyone needs any sort of like guilty pleasure sort of like coming out, we'll be looking to discuss Star Wars in December.
Yeah.
So if you need
That'll never get anywhere, Star Wars.
So if anyone's looking for an excuse...
Is there a Star Wars film coming out this year?
There might be. If anyone's looking for an excuse to marathon a load of Star Wars films, we're giving it to you. Other than, you know, why would you need an excuse? But you should probably do it for us. Do it for us. Do
when
it for the Nerds Assemble
pleasure,
podcast.
I thought you were going to announce Nerds Assemble After Dark.
One day.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I want to point out that we've got sort of like such kind of games See, what's because I'm the one that ended up putting up sort of chunky games, and then so who picked Final Fantasy as a series?
Me.
Yeah. So yeah, play a Final Fantasy game, play Morrowind, play a Pokemon game or something. You know, like basically. Well, Final Fantasy's happening in December as well. So just pick a Final Fantasy, any Final Fantasy, and try to play it sometime. You know,
it's a pity there haven't been any Final Fantasy games after 6.
Yeah. But anyway, we're just giving you all a heads up. Like I said, I'm going to try and make a page on the website for like the full list with rough dates. But at least you will know the order.
The order.
But that is all. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Only following the orders.
Shut up, Wesley.
Don't.